Okay, I think I finally got myself together here. All right, continuing in Daniel. We're going to perhaps finish up chapter 2 this evening, talking about Nebuchadnezzar's dream. And before we begin, just want to make sure everybody is aware. The plan originally was for them to hold Caleb's grandfather's funeral today, and then they would start driving home and be home Saturday or Friday night or Saturday. But they postponed the funeral until Saturday because the roads have been pretty snowy, and they wanted to make sure all the family could get there. And so the funeral is on Saturday, and then they will travel home. So we'll be without Caleb and family one more Sunday. They should be back, early next week. excuse me. Okay. No, Sunday we have coming, and I have to confirm this with him. We have coming a young man named Jay Hopkins, young man from Florida College. Yes, right. Yeah, so he'll be preaching for us Sunday morning and Sunday evening. All right, I spoke with him today, and he said he was willing to do that, but I need to call and just firm that up, you know, so... Excuse me. All right, so before we begin, let's have a word of prayer. Our dear Father in heaven, we thank you for bringing us here tonight, and we thank you for the opportunity to study your word, to study from Daniel, and to take the opportunity to understand this very interesting book of prophecy and history. Help us to do just that, to understand it, and most importantly, to understand the message that that is left for us, that we might understand you better, that we might understand what our purpose is better, that we might have a better understanding of that you are in control of all things, that we might have faith in you, that no matter what happens on this earth, no matter how dire the circumstances seem to be, that you are always there watching and controlling, and that we can trust in you, that your promises will never fail. Help us to have that faith, dear God. We pray all of these things in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so let's see. So far, we've got... we've been introduced to Daniel. We see that he's been given in chapter 1 and verse 17, given understanding in all visions and dreams. And so so that's what we're talking about now, is chapter 2. We have Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and we talked about the fact that he had dreams in verse 2. And so we think maybe perhaps this was a recurring dream. And it was a troubling dream. It was something that Nebuchadnezzar realized was out of the ordinary. And that somebody was trying to tell him something. Somebody had a message for him. And he had no idea what that message was. He needed somebody to tell him. And so who does he turn to? He turns to his wise men. That's what they're there for. To help him understand these dreams. But the problem is that the wise men, the Chaldeans, had a formula for interpreting dreams, and that was they would look up in their book and say, what did you dream? Oh, okay, well that, let's see, it says right here that's a symbol for this. And that means, you know, you're going to be victorious in battle next month or something. I mean, who knows? Who knows what it was? But that was the way they interpreted dreams. Nebuchadnezzar didn't want any of that. He wanted something more. He realized this was special, and so he wanted to be sure of the interpretation. And so he said, you will tell me what the dream is, and then you will tell me what the interpretation is. And the Chaldeans and wise men said, nobody's ever asked for that before. And we certainly cannot do that. And so Nebuchadnezzar's response was, well, then you're all going to die. I have no use for you anymore because you cannot do this for me. Why am I paying you? so to speak. All right. So that's where we kind of left things. there would be astrologers and magicians, and then you know they had these books, Book of Dreams, that they would excuse me. Right. So my understanding of this, and I don't have real deep understanding of this, but that these are people that just displayed a special knowledge, a special ability.
Yes.
Psychiatrists.
Means that.
Well, yeah. That's that. All right. That, yeah, that's kind of...
1,000 years.
Right? I guess that's probably right. I'm sure some psychiatrist is going to watch this and they're going to, you know, shake their head. But... these are people who claim to have some kind of special knowledge and special ability. You think about the magicians in Moses' time that were capable of turning their rods into snakes, right? And they seem, you know, somehow they were able to do that. We don't understand how, but we understand that God showed that he was greater by having Moses' rod turn into a snake, and that snake ate all the other snakes, you know. And so we have this same kind of thing happening here. Yes?
Isn't it true even today? I feel if you play around with spiritual, demonic things, you may indeed get messages from the evil spirits.
Okay.
So it's a dangerous game.
Yeah, well, certainly not something we want to play with or pursue. Somebody put it to me this way. If you are hearing, if the voice of God, if you think the voice of God is telling you to do something, how do you know it's the voice of God? And so this is something we need to be very careful of, that we understand what God wants us to do is here. He has told us what he wants us to do. And so if we're seeking knowledge from anywhere else, we have a problem. We may find it. We may find knowledge. But it's not the voice of God. The voice of God is here. this is what God is trying to tell us through Daniel. This is what God is trying to tell Nebuchadnezzar, is that you need to listen to me. I know what I'm talking about. Okay? So, and I said we left it there where the king was going to kill all the wise men, but we read a little farther than that. Well, that's what we're going to see in our next reading. But the captain of the guard, Arioch, comes to Daniel to tell him the good news. Hey, you get ready to die, And Daniel says, wait a minute, why is this so urgent? What is the king's problem here? And Arioch explains it to him. And so we find that Daniel didn't even know what was going on. This is down in verse 12 through 16. So Daniel doesn't even know what's going on. And so he makes an appointment with the king and to tell him what the dream, the interpretation of the dream. And then he does that on faith, because then he asks God to help him. He asks God for mercy. And we see that starting in verse 17 through 23. We see that there's a prayer to God for mercy. And then in verse 19, the mystery is revealed to Daniel. And then we talked about the prayer in response, the prayer of praise in verses 20 through 23. Where Daniel acknowledges that all wisdom comes from God. And he says, blessed be the name, in verse 20, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. And then in verse 23, To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we ask of you, for you have made known to us the king's matter. Okay, so that's where we left things in verse 23. And so we're going to continue reading in verse 24 through the end of the chapter. Yes, he did. All right. So, therefore, in verse 24, therefore Daniel went into Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus to him, "Do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show the king the interpretation." Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste and said thus to him, "I have found among the exiles from Judah a man who will make known to the king the interpretation." The king declared to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, "Are you able to make known to me the dream that I have seen and its interpretation?" Daniel answered the king and said, "No wise men, enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show to the king the mystery that the king has asked. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head as you lay in bed are these. To you, O king, as you lay in bed, came thoughts of what would be after this. And he who reveals mysteries made known to you what is to be. But as for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because of any wisdom that I have more than all the living, but in order that the interpretation may be made known to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your mind. You saw, O king, and behold, a great image. This image, mighty and of exceeding brightness, stood before you, and its appearance was frightening. The head of this image was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its middle and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. As you looked, a stone was cut out by no human hand, and it struck the image on its feet of iron and clay, and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold, all together were broken in pieces, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, so that not a trace of them could be found. But the stone that struck the image became a great mountain, and filled the whole earth. This was the dream. Now we will tell the king its interpretation. You, O king, the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, and the might, and the glory, and into whose hand he has given, wherever they dwell, the children of man, the beasts of the field, and the birds of the heavens, making you rule over them all, you are the head of gold. Another kingdom inferior to you shall arise after you, and yet a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And there shall be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron, because iron breaks into pieces and shatters all things. And like iron that crushes, it shall break and crush all these. And as you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, it shall be a divided kingdom. But some of the firmness of iron shall be in it, just as you saw iron mixed with the soft clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly iron and partly clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly brittle. As you saw the iron mixed with soft clay, so they will mix with one another in marriage, but they will not hold together, just as iron does not mix with clay. And in the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed, nor shall the kingdom be left to another people. It shall break in pieces all these kingdoms and bring them to an end, and it shall stand forever, just as you saw that a stone was cut from a mountain by no human hand, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold. A great God has made known to the king what shall be after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation sure. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel and commanded that an offering and incense be offered up to him. The king answered and said to Daniel, "Truly your God is God of gods and Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this mystery." Then the king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts and made him ruler of the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. Daniel made a request of the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel remained at the king's court. Okay, well, there's the end of the story. Just as it would seem so, and we'll talk about that, to what extent does he believe? And that's a very interesting point. Now, so we already saw in our last reading on Sunday that Daniel made this appointment with the king in verse 16, made an appointment that he might show the interpretation of the king. Well, now here, at the beginning of this reading in verse 24, Daniel says to Arioch, "Bring me to the king." All right, so which is it? Did Daniel make an appointment, or did he tell Arioch to bring him? Okay. Okay. It doesn't have to be one or the other. That's a trick question. it can be both. Okay. So yeah. So what we find here is that Daniel, and it's interesting that here Arioch is there to kill Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but Daniel is given leeway to go and make this appointment with the king. All right. And he does that, and then he comes back and speaks to God. So this is the chain of events here. And then after he speaks to God and gets the interpretation, then he tells Arioch, okay, let's go keep that appointment. I've got the interpretation. Take me in to see the king. Arioch was commanded to kill Daniel.
Uh-oh.
Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and all the wise men, right? So that was Arioch's job, kill them all, right? And that's what he came... But you see, we see this again, where God has given Daniel favor with those that are in authority over him. We saw that with the chief of the eunuchs in chapter 1. We saw that with the steward in chapter 1. We saw that with Nebuchadnezzar himself in in chapter 1. And here I think we're seeing the same thing with Arioch, that God has given him, because, you know, Arioch probably should have just showed up there and killed them, right? Or at least hauled them off to jail to kill them whenever, you know, it was their turn.
Just a minute, we're hearing that Arioch was reluctant to
at least in the case... Yeah, at least in the case of Daniel, it would seem. And then the other thing about this that's interesting to me is that, okay, so in verse 24, Daniel says, don't destroy the wise men, wait a minute, I've got this covered, bring me into the king and I'll show him the interpretation. And Arioch does, and claims responsibility for finding Daniel. All right, so what's your first thought when you hear that?
Number one, I don't know that Arioch was told that he had to kill him this minute.
Okay, all right.
So he may have some way there. Okay, I get it done. Here.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
Second thing, you know, like Elijah said, I'm lucky.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Daniel had to tell him.
Right. So. Well, there you go. God is in control. So we see that, you know, no matter what's happening, we see that. Okay, but that's a double-edged sword, right? Because if Daniel does have the interpretation, Arioch's going to look like a hero, right? He's gonna be, I found the guy, I found the man that you wanted, King. Reward me, okay? But if Daniel can't give him the interpretation, what's gonna happen to Arioch? Arioch's sticking his neck out, literally, for Daniel. Yeah. So that tells me, once again, God has given Daniel favor in the sight of those in authority over him. Especially Arioch. Arioch seems to put his trust in Daniel's ability to do what he said he would do. And, you know, that kind of goes along with what Nebuchadnezzar found, that back in chapter 1 and verse 20, "And in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them," Daniel included, "he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom." Well, that reputation may have gone along with Daniel. Maybe, perhaps the whole court knew what Nebuchadnezzar found. Okay, right. So, maybe Daniel has spoken with Arioch before about his God and who he is and what he's capable of. Okay. So, very, very interesting. You know, it's not... things aren't happening the way you would necessarily expect them to happen. And there again, God is in control. That's what God does. He makes things happen that you don't expect. Yes. Did you have a hand? Okay. All right. Okay. So, now, it's also interesting that Arioch brings him in and says, Daniel says, "I will show the king the interpretation," in verse 24. Arioch brings Daniel in and says, "He will make known to the king the interpretation." And the king says, Are you able to make known to me the dream that I have seen and its interpretation?" Nebuchadnezzar hasn't forgotten about his initial request, his requirement. And so Daniel, of course, says that he can do that. But he doesn't just say, "Yes, of course I can do that." He says, he affirms what the wise men have said. "No wise men," in verse 27, "enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show to the king the mystery that the king has asked." They're not lying to you, king. They really can't do it. But who can? God. The answer to all questions above us. God can. God can do this. There is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. How does that contrast to what the magicians had said earlier in the chapter? Yes. And who did they say could do it for him? They said, "There is somebody. There is somebody who could do it for you," in verse 11. "We can't do it. No one can show it to the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh." Ah, so they're right, in a way. Not the gods, but the God. Daniel affirms what the magicians say. There is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. No, God doesn't dwell with flesh. He is in heaven, but he does take care of us. He does reveal things to us. He does give us wisdom. Yes. No, Daniel is Belteshazzar. That's his Babylonian name. Belteshazzar. Belteshazzar. Yeah. And what makes it confusing is that later on there will be a king Belshazzar who is different. Who's different from Daniel. That won't be Daniel. Okay, so we'll deal with that confusion later on. Okay, so so he attributes this to God, and he says, "As for me, this mystery has been revealed to me not because of any wisdom," this is in verse 30, "not because of any wisdom that I have more than all the living." It's not me, Nebuchadnezzar, it is God that is giving me this wisdom, because God wants you to know something. Okay, right. So, what is it that this dream is about, in general, that he says in verse 29? Okay, well, excuse me. In general, though, in verse 29, he says, these are things, mysteries, And he who reveals mysteries made known to you what is to be. So this is a mystery. This is a revelation of the future, something that's going to happen. Okay. And in verse 28, he says, "Made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head as you lay in bed are these." Okay. And then he clarifies, "To you, O king, as you lay in bed, came thoughts of what would be after this." Okay, so how specific is this time that Daniel's talking about? Okay, yeah, we don't really know. It's just later on, somewhere down the road, these things are going to happen. This is what God is revealing to you. Latter days, sometimes we think about end times. Like Revelation, you know, that kind of thing. But in this case, in the context, it seems that he's simply talking about things that are going to take place after Nebuchadnezzar. Sometime after the time of Nebuchadnezzar. So later on. Right, okay. So we have this statue. So he's revealing the dream. We have this statue. It's, how would you, what image do you get in your mind when you think of this statue? Is it like an Oscar, you know? Okay. All right. So. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think you're thinking along the right lines. We don't know exactly, but in Nebuchadnezzar's mind, a statue would have been a god or a king or some great figure that you're trying to reverence, right? We get this idea that it's huge. It says it's mighty. It also says it's exceedingly bright, and it's frightening. Okay, all right. So this is something that would inspired awe in Nebuchadnezzar. Something that really was troubling to look at. What is the head of gold? What does Daniel say is the head of gold? All right. Okay. He says you are the head of gold. To Nebuchadnezzar, you are the head of gold. Now, what's going to happen to the statue in the end? All going to be crushed. What's going to be left of this statue in the end? Right. And what's going to happen to the dust? It's going to blow away. So, in the end, the statue's gone. It is just gone. Now, think of Nebuchadnezzar. He's the head of this statue. He's the golden head, which is great. That sounds wonderful. I'm the golden head. And then it just all goes away. That's pretty frightening, right? Right, exactly. So it's possible that the head even looked like Nebuchadnezzar, you know, because they would make statues of kings like that. You know, it's speculation. But we can start to see why this was troubling to Nebuchadnezzar. Because a statue kind of meant a certain thing. It was something great and mighty, and then it comes to nothing. And now Daniel's telling him, you're the head of that statue. Now, so what does Daniel say about the rest of the statue?
Part of this chapter is, okay, fine, you've got this huge kingdom, but basically rule the known earth, Nebuchadnezzar. And you're the head of it now, but in the future, it's not going to be so. It's going to be scattered.
Right. Exactly. That is the whole point. Now, so let's talk a little bit about the materials. We got the head of gold. We got the chest. What is it? What does it call it? The chest and arms of what's that made out of?
Silver.
Silver. Okay. So it's going down in value. And then we have the middle and thighs of bronze. The legs of Iron, and then the feet are iron and clay. Okay, so we're going from great worth down to, you know, as far as man's, you know, man thinks of it, not worth much at all. Okay, iron and clay, you don't think of that as being worth much. Okay.
Well, other things that
Uh-huh.
Well, you think about this, it's lowering value of the thing, but at the bottom, it's all propped up by very weakest link.
Right, right, okay.
This is, that's why it crumbles.
Right.
What you don't know is that this is how the kingdom is going on in the hinterland, probably. You don't know it's all going to come to mind.
Right. So Nebuchadnezzar, any idea that Nebuchadnezzar has that his kingdom is going to last forever. Right. That, yeah, he's been disabused of that. I mean, if anything else, if nothing else, that is something that Nebuchadnezzar is learning through this. Because not only he's just the head of gold, and then there's the silver and the bronze and the iron. And so, well, what does Daniel tell us those things represent?
Kingdoms.
Which kingdoms?
Well, the entire
Greece, Rome.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So the traditional view of this. Now there are some that believe that these are different kings of Babylon itself. But it's kind of hard to reconcile that with the whole thing with the stone at the end. Because we understand that the stone is the greatest kingdom that will never end. And we understand that kingdom belongs to who? Right. When did that kingdom get set up? Yeah. Okay. All right. Who is our king?
Jesus.
All right. So this is what this is looking forward to, is Jesus. All right. And so it's kind of hard to reconcile that these are all different kings of Babylon when the end of it is Jesus, because we know Babylon was long gone before Jesus. All right. So, but they're, you know, they're, it's not entirely without merit. But let's just look at the traditional view. The traditional view is that the head of gold, Nebuchadnezzar, is Babylon. Okay, so Nebuchadnezzar represents Babylon, that kingdom. All right, and then we're going to see in Daniel, after Babylon comes the Medo-Persian Empire. Okay, so they're going to take over. So that would be the silver part. And then after that, with some other events that happen, eventually the Greeks take over. And they're the major empire in the world. And so that would be the bronze portion. And then after that, the Romans take over. And so that would be the iron portion. And then we understand that Rome was scattered far and wide, and it was a mixed people, and Rome spent a lot of time trying to keep the kingdom in submission, because you had all these different people all over the world that they had to suppress, you know, and keep from rising up. And so this mixture of peoples made it weaker, even though it appeared to be strong. That's my view of things anyway. All right. So that's the traditional view. Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. Others say it's Babylon, Media, Persia, and Greece. Others say it's Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and the Seleucids. They don't go all the way to Rome. Whatever it is, it's Daniel says it's Nebuchadnezzar, and then another kingdom, and then an inferior kingdom to that, and then a third kingdom. Another inferior kingdom, then a third kingdom, then a fourth kingdom. So whoever those are, it really doesn't matter too much in the context of what Nebuchadnezzar needs to know. What is it that Nebuchadnezzar needs to know? Okay. Enjoy it while you got it, because it ain't going to last long. What did you say, Mary?
God in heaven.
Okay. In the end, whose kingdom is going to last? God's kingdom. God's kingdom. In the end, who is going to build the kingdom that lasts? Okay. A stone made, not cut out with hands. Okay. A stone that just appears as out of nowhere. All right. And it comes and it destroys, utterly destroys everything. And what does it become? The stone. What becomes a great mountain that fills the whole earth. Okay? God is telling Nebuchadnezzar, as great as you think you are, you're that golden head, you're wonderful, you think that you've got it made, as great as you think you are, I am greater. And so you need to listen to Daniel and you need to listen to me. That is the message of this dream. Now, let's see. I've been skipping all around, so I'm sure I've skipped some things that I meant to say. Any comments or questions while I'm trying to get my head straight here? All right. So, okay, so, wow, okay, so we may not get to chapter 3 on Sunday. All right, I want to look at some things, a couple of things about this stone. Look at Exodus chapter 20. We have a similar idea here to this stone that was, what is the language it uses? Suddenly I'm forgetting it. A stone was cut out by no human hand. Okay, stone cut out by no human hand. Look at Exodus chapter 20, verses 22 through 26. And the Lord said to Moses, "Thus you shall say to the people of Israel, you have seen for yourselves that I have talked with you from heaven. You shall not make gods of silver to be with me. Nor shall you make for yourselves gods of gold. An altar of earth you shall make for me, and sacrifice on it your burnt offerings and your peace offerings, your sheep and your oxen. In every place where I cause my name to be remembered, I will come to you and bless you. If you make me an altar of stone, you shall not build it of hewn stones. For if you wield your tool on it, you profane it. And you shall not go up by steps to my altar, that your nakedness be not exposed on it." You see, it was important to God that if they used stones, they used natural stones. They just picked up stones and put them in a pile. God's creation, not man's, to worship God. I think it's the same idea as this stone hewn or cut out by no human hand. This was God's creation. They have the same kind of a similar thing in Genesis chapter 11, where we have the Tower of Babel in this exact same place where Daniel is now, the Plain of Shinar. Now the whole earth had one language and the same words, and as people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there, and they said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly." And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. Then they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth." And we find out what the Lord thinks about that, right? So this idea of man's creation versus God's creation. They made brick for stone because they thought that would be better. And they could build this huge tower. And they could be there up there with God. They didn't need God to come down to them. They didn't need God to give them permission to be have a relationship with them. They could just go up to God. And they're going to use their brick to accomplish this. And they had brick for stone. So we see this contrast of man's creation versus God's creation. Yes, this is where the Lord confused people. And so we have the same idea with this image that Nebuchadnezzar saw. It was an image of a man with a head and a torso and legs and feet. An image of a man versus this stone cut out with no human hand. Who wins? The stone. The stone wins. And the stone takes over the whole earth and lasts forever. Whereas the human image goes away, becomes nothing. It's as if it never existed. So this is the message for Nebuchadnezzar. It's a message for us. We'll continue to talk about that on Sunday. Any other comments or questions? Right? Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, those mountains aren't going anywhere, are they? but we're constantly having to tear down the buildings that have been built, you know, that have stood for years, but they don't last forever. Yeah. All right, so we will continue this discussion of chapter 2 on Sunday, and then Caleb will be back to continue next Thursday. Thank you for your attention tonight.